Okay. I'd like to spend our time this evening exclusively on chapter 4, managing time. It's really there's a lot more here than you might think, you know, and I can imagine somebody saying, that's wrong, right? Yeah, that's wrong. Somebody saying, gee, why didn't he begin with this? Because this is kind of a starting point, but you find that in spiritual texts all the time, that the reason for the organization sometimes escapes us, but I think that the reason for the organization in those cases, and in this case too probably, is that, you know, he starts out where we are and gives us what we can understand, and chapter 3, the last chapter, the long one, going inwards, that had a lot of stuff in it, a lot of material in it, that was actually probably the most intellectual chapter in this little book. Chapter 4, managing time, he manages to say some things that I think are really difficult to make this comprehensible, this understandable. He's going to be talking about the fact that it is possible for us to stop time and find a place of silence. If he had done this chapter first, our tendency would have been to try to start to think as if this book were going to be a step-by-step telling us of exactly how to approach prayer as a method or as a procedure, something like that. We're no longer in danger of that by the time we get to this chapter. So I think that's why he starts here. So the first major point that he makes is this. We can control and stop time. We can pray to God only if we are established in a state of stability and inner peace, face to face with God. And the things that he's beginning to discuss, the things that he's going to talk about, release us from the sense of time. And he's going to spend the rest of the chapter describing those things and telling us, giving us some ideas of where we can start based on things that we already are going to be able to find understandable and doable. He's going to give a lot of examples in this chapter. He says that we have the sense ourselves. We experience the sense that time is going fast. We have no time left to be able to do all the things that we need to do, and we have to quick do this and quick do that, and we're running from one thing to another, and there's no peace, you know, for us. He points out very soon after that that isn't the way it actually is. Time is not getting away from us. Time is coming toward us, and it's as though we are sitting still, and he gives the example of riding in a train or riding in a car that someone else is driving. This is contemplative riding, which is safer than contemplative driving, you know, that I've talked about, you know, before. This is not good to contemplate the fact that time is coming towards you and you're driving into this kind of, stop time and let it wash past you. Because if you do that, there might be cars, you know, that also, you know, run past you, and you know, they can hit you, and so it's better if somebody else is driving, you know, and the example that he gives, has to do with that. And the point he is making is that we can be completely stable and yet move in time, because time, it's time that moves. We don't have to try to catch it. You know, we can be a stable point, you know, in our own lives, and have a sense of peace, and just deal with things as they come. respond to them. He's going to describe to us how we can begin to experience this this ability to gain this capacity to manage time. He says one of the problems is that we are always trying to live ahead of ourselves. We're trying to live in the future. We're thinking of the things that we need to do next, you know, and we have so many things that we're thinking about that we need to do next that we forget that we can only do anything now. We can't do things in the future. We have to do them in the present. Anything that we do is going to be done in the present. We can't jump out of the present into the future and the way we're constantly trying to do. That is what prevents us from being completely in the present moment, he says. The only moment in which we can be. We can't live in the future. We can't live in the past. He'll make that point again, soon as well. And this is something that we have to learn about prayer. What do we have to learn? We have to learn to be able to establish ourselves in the present. If we're trying to pray, and we're thinking of the things that we're going to do after we've completed this little piece of time, you know, that we've devoted to prayer, and it's almost like we're in the future already. I mean, it's like we've finished praying, and we're already moving onto other things that we're going to do. And we have to be able to have this ability to fix ourselves, to stop ourselves, and be in the present, because that's where we can pray from where we actually are, where prayer becomes active, you know, and we're actually doing it. We behave in general, he says, as though the present were an imaginary line, a very thin imaginary line that divides the past and the future. I remember I was in I forget what kind of a philosophy class it was. I know we studied Sartre, and I didn't like him. But we talked about present, past, future, and I made a comment, which I absolutely disagree, but I remember having made it in this class. We were talking about the present. And I said, it's very succinct, but it's completely false. The present is the future becoming the past. And that's how we live. The present is the future becoming the past. So where's the present? It's gone. It's gone. It disappears. It's like all that exists is the past and the future. We live like that. We have the sense, and that's why we feel so rushed, because it's just constantly, you know, and we're trying to catch up, you know, we're trying, and you can't, you know. The present is the future becoming the past. That's incorrect. That's not. And he put and Metropolitan Anthony puts the same thing like this. We roll from the past into the future, continually passing this line in the same way. It's as though we were the train, you know, not the person sitting quietly in the train while the landscape passes by, because that's what's going to happen. We come to one station, you know, Crestwood, next station, Tuckahoe. You know, I mentioned these because that's how I used to commute up there, you know. And the events that are coming, they're going to come that way. They come at us, and we can be stable, and you can't deal with any of them ahead of time, you know, because they're not going to be the way that you think they are anyway, you know, so you have to deal with them in the present. It's the only possibility. But the way we live, if we live in this kind of way, you know, in this wrong-headed kind of way, there is no present because it's always in the future, you know. We get used to living like that. He gives an example from when he was living in France during the German occupation of France. The Vichy government was in control, you know, the French government that was cooperating with the Nazis. And he was living in France at that time, in Paris. And he was active in the underground, which you probably already know. He was a doctor. He was active in the underground. He was secretly a monk, but nobody knew that yet. And one day he was in the underground, and all of a sudden a German officer, you know, put his hand on Metropolitan Anthony's shoulder and told him, stop, let me see your papers. And he said, he says, that that is the moment at which he realized that it is only the present that exists. His past was gone. I mean, this German officer could take him, could shoot him on the spot, could throw him into a prison camp, for the rest of the war, could do whatever he wanted. He doesn't mention what happened to him.
He does mention.
Does
he?
Oh, okay. I forgot. I missed that. But he says the experience, that was the occasion of an epiphany, for him. And the epiphany is when you have a sudden awakening, a sudden experience of understanding something directly on the basis of your own experience, not because you read it in a book, not because somebody explained it to you. Somebody may have explained it to you. But this kind of direct experience, you understand it for yourself. And he says that that is when he experienced this reality of the present. Later on he says it can happen when you have an automobile accident. Time seems to slow down. You need to do certain things. You actually, you're full of adrenaline. You're doing things that need to be done, very quickly. And when Sharon and I were in my Insight and we hit that patch of black ice years ago up in South Carolina. And I lost control of the car, and we started going up this way, that way, almost had it under control, hit the bank, and finally went over, launched into the air, the car turning sideways, flying through the air. Lots of time for lots of things to do. The total living in the present, and this is the kind of thing that happened to Metropolitan Anthony when he was all of a sudden accosted, by this German officer. And there was time, it was time for me to apologize to my wife for having put an end to her life, by not being able to control my car, and before we hit the ground, finally. So that was, you live in the present in that kind of moment because you need to live in the present. It's life or death, what you do. In this case, I was not able to prevent the accident. So life or death, yes, but it was, the grace of God, not my considerable skill at driving a car, that failed me on that particular occasion. So we've had experiences like that. Not all of us. If you haven't, don't feel like you've missed out on anything. You're better off without some of those experiences. There are other ways to find those things out. So he stopped. He says that the past is just, it's irrelevant. The past could end up being the cause of his being shot. That's true. But it's, in terms of the living of his life, what is critical is the present. And as far as he gives the example of a lizard, one of those lizards that used to run around on our deck up in South Carolina. We used to see them all the time. There were loads of them. And then copperheads would come to eat them. We had the snakes and the lizards, the snakes came for the lizards. But if you try to catch one of those and he'd be gone before you, put your hand down, you might catch his tail, a lizard take off you, all you got is a tail. And he says that's what his past was like for him at that point. And it was like a detachable tail. It was no longer part of him. It was just past. It was irrelevant. And the future, who knew what it was going to be? It's the unknown. It's black unknown. And so the past is cut off, and the future, it isn't yet. So you don't know what's going to happen next. So all you have left is the present, and that is the moment in which he lived. And he experienced that very intensively at that moment and understood some things that he had not understood previously. Says, you yourself, and exactly where the darkness begins. You can't go any further. That's you. You stop right before the beginning of the future, the next moment. There is only the present moment. So he discovered he had no future either. No past, no future, just in the present. It was then I discovered that living in the past on the one hand and in the future on the other hand was simply not possible. Lots of times we don't realize it because we spend so much time in our heads predicting what's going to happen in the future, reflecting what's happened in the past, that we don't realize that that this is the case. And somebody can tell you, you can only live in the present, but to experience it is different. You know it in a way that is not just a matter of head knowledge, but you actually experience it. The lizard had no tail. Darkness was in my face. I discovered that I was pressed into the present moment. And that's the way it always is. The reality, the fact is that you only ever exist in this present, silent moment when the future is rushing past you or coming slow, either way. That's the only way it can be. It can't be any other way. The present moment is there. The past is irretrievably gone. It is irrelevant, except to the extent to which it is still in the present. In the case of the German officer, the past could be the cause of his being shot. But it doesn't have really anything to do with his experience of that moment. You know, he is entirely and completely, and maybe even more so than usual, alive and experiencing being alive because of his situation. Later on he talks about that experience, but we'll get to that. The future is irrelevant because it may happen or it may not. It may be the end. And then he gives the example of the accident. In this kind of moment, you have no time to roll comfortably from the past into the future, living in your head instead of living in the actual physical moment. What you have got to do is come, and when you pray, you need to be praying in the actual physical moment because you need your body, and your body exists in the physical moment. Prayer is supposed to be, at the same time, physical and spiritual, like everything, you know, in Christian faith. It's not supposed to be just mental, you know, or spiritual and leaving the body behind, but the body and the prayer of the spirit, the mind and the heart is one way of putting it. You know, they both got to be there. Otherwise, prayer is really not fully possible. You know, okay. You have no time to roll comfortably from the past into the future. What you've got to do is so completely in the present that all your energies and all your being is summed up in the word now. You discover with great interest that you are in the now. Okay, and then he says, we must do exercises in stopping time. Exercise. Spiritual exercises. And this exercise is the first exercise. He says you could do it any time when you have absolutely nothing to do. All of a sudden we realize we have to wait for something. It could be 5-10 minutes, you know, however long it is, we can do this spiritual exercise. And this is an exercise that is going to prepare us to be able to do contemplative prayer. Contemplation prepares you for other types of prayer, is one of the things that he's going to say. You can use 3 minutes, 5 minutes, half an hour for doing nothing, and you don't have to feel guilty about it. This is something that always makes me sound better than I really am when I say it, but I have to remind myself of it. But it is the case, you know, that I like to say, and I like to remind myself that I say, I don't mind waiting, because when you have to wait, you're not responsible to do anything, you know. If you have to wait in traffic, of course, now you have to get over that in, you know, trying to live in the future. You know, that's your problem. You know, you're supposed to be someplace and you're stuck in traffic. You know, there's nothing you can do. You know, I mean, you know, you could, pull a Tom Cruise and jump out of a car and run across the cars, something like that. You really can't do anything. You have to sit there, you know. So it's your time. It's free time. You know, you don't have to feel guilty about anything that you ought to be doing that you're not doing. What you're supposed to do is wait. You know, so this is the kind of time that comes along all the time. He started at the beginning of the chapter. He says, look, I'm not going to try to convince you. You need to take time, you know, and slate it, you know, for prayer. Not going to do that in this chapter. What I'm going to point out to you is that there are bits and pieces of time that come along that you can use for what he's describing that otherwise you would waste. I mean, you might get mad. You might... you know, say bad things that you have to confess later if you have your drivers or if somebody you didn't even know what's going on up there or something like that, a big waste of time. So use this time. And if you use all these little bits of time, you'll find that you have plenty of time, to practice this exercise and ultimately to pray. Realize I am here in the presence of God, in my own presence, and in the presence of all that is around me. Just, I am still moving nowhere. You know, I have this time. 5 minutes, you can assign that time to learning that the present exists. Not be frustrated about it. Just live in that moment. You should be determined not to be pulled out of it by the telephone. If you've taken this time at home and, you can say to yourself, the telephone rings, I will ignore it, you try to turn the answering machine off before you start. You actually could pull the thing, so it doesn't ring. But, I don't know if there's a way to make it turn the ringer off, and it'll ring, you won't hear it, and the answering machine will still work, I think. You can do that. I'm not sure. I think you can. So, but anyway, you are determined you're not going to be disturbed by a knock on the door, some upsurge of energy, which is the most likely thing that prompts you to go and do right now something that you haven't done for 10 years. That, so, well, I really need to do this. I need to get up and go take care of it. That's the kind of thing that comes to you when you try to do this, And he says later that, when you're lazy and you don't feel like doing anything, you sit there a lot longer than 5 minutes, maybe even sometimes years. All that stuff is going by, I do have notes that are more than a year old, of things that's on my to-do list, It's like on my to-do list last year, too.
Yeah, I wish I were joking, but I'm not joking.
Yeah, no.
I've been for a long time.
If you learn to do this at lost moments of your life, he says, when you have learned to be completely calm and happy and stable and serene in these moments, then you can extend these few minutes to a longer time and then to a longer time still. You will require some defenses. For example, make up your mind that if you were not at home, you would not open the door because you would be somewhere else and everything would be fine. You wouldn't answer the phone. No great disaster. It's probably somebody trying to sell you something anyway. More times than not.
Or a politician.
So.
Yeah.
When you have learned, now he's talking about learning stability, learning to be able to be peaceful and stable, and let things go by. When you have learned this serenity, you will have to learn to stop time, not only at the moments when it drags and you have all of a sudden the opportunity to do this sort of thing, as an exercise, or has stopped anyway because there are no events going on, But at moments when events are passing by, are rushing by, and time puts claims on you, the way to do this, he says, is this. Say to yourself, stop. If you do this, you'll discover several things. First of all, you'll discover that if you do that, the world does not worry about it. It just, things go on, they take care of themselves. You don't have to be participating, you don't have to be rushing along with them. And during Great Lent, when we turn off the TV, and I don't get to watch the news every day and make myself miserable, things go on without me. They get better or they get worse, and there's nothing I could have done about it anyway. So it's not critical on my constant paying attention to it. We deceive ourselves and say that there are things that we must do. Now, there are things we must do. He's not saying don't do anything, be a monk forever out of the cave. There are things we need to do. But then later on he says, once you master this ability, you will be able to do the things that you need to do when you begin to work on them much more efficiently than if you were to be constantly distracted by all of the six other things that you would need to do at the same time, which is certainly true. I know for sure, for the candidate, that is the case. Moments of sheer laziness is where he says this. At moments of sheer laziness, we leave things undone for much longer than 5 minutes, the 5 minutes that we've chosen. So we should just reject these temptations to feel like we need to get up and do something. He describes this time that we are entering into as God's own time. And he says that what we are doing... Yeah, go ahead and sit. I have one here. Just going to make two more of these. Can you use these things? I don't know. Some, probably something deadly. I'm not sure.
No meat.
Just pass them around. At first, we'll see. We'll have a lot of difficulty avoiding this sense that there's something that we've got to get up and do. But after a little while, when we realize that we can postpone virtually anything, you know, except for extreme circumstances, for 5 or 10 minutes, nothing happens, everything's fine. And if you're doing something that requires attention, you'll realize how much better and more quickly you can do it if you can, achieve this state of quietness. He gives the example of when he was a doctor. When he was first a doctor, and he's got all these people in the waiting room, and if he'll come in one at a time, he looks out, look at all the people, there's like 20 people out there, and they're coming in one at a time, and he felt like at first, when he was a very young doctor, he was cheating those people outside if he didn't rush through each person coming in. But then he realized that when he did that, at the end of the day, he didn't remember anybody. So he had really short shrifted everybody. So he realized that what he needed to do was to calm down and focus on the person that he was talking to right then, as though that were the only person in the world, and there weren't anybody out in the waiting room, and they are waiting so that they can come and have that same kind of quality time with their doctor. And the next time you're with a doctor and he starts to talk about, chit-chat, everything under the sun, you might think to yourself, hey, this doctor is doing what Metropolitan Anthony says that he does, that the moment he began to feel, I must be quick, I must be efficient, he would sit back and engage in small talk for a few minutes just to prevent himself from hurrying. So if you have your doctor doing that sort of thing, you may have a wise doctor there, who is trying to prevent not giving you the quality time that you deserve for the, $85 an hour or a second, or, that he's going to bill you, so you should appreciate that. Be completely concerned with the person or task that is in front of you. That's a general rule for us across the board. When you have finished, you'll discover you've spent half the time doing it that you would have if you've been thinking of dealing with the next person or dealing with the next task that needed to be done. And feeling like there's more than I can ever get done, here, when you actually sit down and start doing it, one task at a time, that's the most efficient way to do it. Okay, so he says, do these spiritual exercises, beginning with stopping time that is not moving, those moments when we have to wait anyway, dead time, and ending with time that is trying to move fast and trying to move you with it. Stop and say no, and you'll discover that moment that you have overcome inner tension, inner agitation, and the anguish that we ordinarily have because we feel like things are getting out of our control, and time passes just fine. We don't have to, be anxious over it. It will pass, It will pass by us, and the most efficient thing that we can do is to deal with the specifics of whatever it is, that is to hand. And then he said, what about, we only have a certain amount of time, and I want to quick get these things done because, none of us lives forever. He gives an example, some advice in terms of a Russian way of thinking, a Russian saying. If you don't die first, you will have time to do it. If you die before it is done, you don't need to do it. So you don't need to worry about anything. You don't need to worry about that kind of stuff. You can't live in the future anyway. If you don't die, you're going to have time to do it. And if you do, it takes care of itself. Don't worry about death, because the situation will dissolve itself. What are you going to do about it? You know, you want to deal with it properly, you know, when the time comes, you know, try to, you know, I think of, you know, people who have died well, you know, Father Schmemann, you know, others that I know of, and we know a little bit about the story of their passing, and they continue to live. I mean, that's what we understand we're going to do anyway. You know, you pass through death alive, you know, and you live, you know, not just up to the last moment, but through the last moment. You know, and if you can't live in the kingdom beyond death now. I mean, you live in the kingdom now, as we Orthodox understand, we already live, you know, as members of the kingdom, you know, and death can't overcome that. But we can't live in the kingdom beyond the end of this life by doing anything other than actually living that life now. And we do that, and that life continues beyond the point of the separation of the soul from the body. Once you have learned these things, you can do anything at great speed with a focus of a great attention. You can do it quickly without any sense of time escaping you or catching up with you. You'll be able to focus on the things that you're doing. Whether you're doing something that that you get into and you kind of get to the end of the task, you're doing quickly, doing efficiently. You're not being distracted by worry or trying to live in the future, you know. And you have no sense of time, you know, because you're only doing what you're doing. You're not splitting your mind up and trying to live in the future. Once you realize this, not only will it make the things that you do more focused and efficient, you also realize that there are no circumstances in which that can prevent you from praying. Because you can be still no matter what's going on. What can prevent you from praying is that you allow yourself to be in the storm, or you allow the storm to come inside of you. I think that's especially good. The storm is there. It doesn't need to be inside of you. It's going on. But you are the still point at the center. You know, and very quickly he gives the example of Jesus Christ in the boat with the storm around him, and the apostles are there in the boat, and he's asleep. You know, the storm is going on. They're worried. They're doing everything they can. They try to, you know, take care of the things that need to be done, you know, bail out, you know, trim the sails, you know. It's not going well, and finally they realize they're in real danger. And he says what's happening is that the storm has entered into them. Now they have the fear of death. You know, they look at Christ, and there he is asleep with his head on the pillow, you know, completely calm, you know. And they get very upset. They get very angry. Why is he awake, you know, trying to save them? You know, all these things that he can do. And so they wake him up. And they say, don't you care that we are perishing? And here you are asleep. You know, Jesus, you know, gets up and he says, men of little faith. And turns, you know, to the storm that is outside him. There's no storm in him. It's entered into the apostles. It has not entered into him. You know, he turns to the storm and projects his own inner stillness, his harmony, and his peace onto the storm. He says, be still, be quiet, and everything is quiet again. Metropolitan Anthony says, we can do this. Now, he's not talking about being out on a boat when you're fishing, you know, and just, okay, calm down, you know. Although I remember there was a story about Elizabeth, one of our daughters. I don't know how she got like this, but she was at school, it really freaked her teachers out. And she was very small. She was, I don't know what, 7, 8, something like that. And, you know, we lived out in the woods at the time, you know, close to nature. And there may have a certain affinity, you know, between our daughters and the natural world, I think because of that experience. I don't think it's ever completely passed away. But she was at school one day, and there was wind blowing and all of this, and the windows were, you know, thrown open or something, and she hollers out into the wind, stop that, you know. Her teacher really, you know, this is an unstable, you know, young person here who thinks that is personalizing the storm. And, you know, well, we can't do that. You know, we can't do that. Jesus can do that because he is who he is. You know, but But we can do the same thing that he did with respect to the storms of emotion and passion and that are going on around us in the world. That storm does not need to enter into us. We can do, you know, as he did, and calm that kind of a storm. We don't need in any situation to be at the mercy of the chaos around us. And I have experienced that. I mean, I've experienced a lot of the things that he talks about in this book. And I mean, it's not something that you need to be some great spiritual master. We are human beings, and this is the reality of things. And if we can get ourselves in touch with it, this is a beginning. This is not something, you know, that is necessarily that advanced. This is a place to begin, you know. I remember now, I don't know if it's appropriate for me to give this example or not. Okay. But, you know, when 9/11 happened, I mean, the world turned upside down. It kind of didn't for me. I think because I'd experienced Vietnam, and I knew the chaos of Vietnam, you know, and this was like Alice in Wonderland. Things are inside out. You know, everything is unreal somehow. You know, you look around and this is chaos around. But for me, it was like, what's going to happen now? People, how are people going to react? What's going to happen? You know, and I felt kind of guilty because I didn't feel those senses of, that people say, outrage and anger and desiring revenge and all that, you know. And it wasn't because, it was just, that's what happened, you know. And it's because I think, you know, maybe because I've been through things, you know, like that before. It just, so it's another point I'm making is that this is something we have the ability to do because we are human beings. And the fact of the matter is that we are not part of the storm, that we're not meant to be caught up in it. It's not like only Christians know about this. That's not true. You know, this experience that he's describing here is, for example, at the center of Buddhism, Zen Buddhism, I have in mind in particular. You know, the experience of not being at the mercy of passions, psychological, emotional, not being at the mercy of the mind and its capacity to think, but stopping the mind. You know, okay, so, you know, Zen Buddhist monks know about that. You know, it does not require God's revelation of himself, you know, to the Jews, or the incarnation of God, Jesus the Christ, in order for people to find out about this. It is in the nature of the world and ourselves as human beings. People know about this. This is just the way the world is. You know, we have the ability to do that. And all we're really talking about is preparing ourselves to pray. Because this is, you know, that's all we're really talking about. That we, in order to pray, we have to be in this kind of stable moment of stillness. You know, the ultimate example of it, of course, Jesus Christ himself. In his case, because of who he is, he can, you know, Metropolitan Anthony can give the example in the boat, you know, where the silence and peace within Christ is the silence and peace at the center of the universe. It is the silence and peace, the divine silence and peace of God himself, which is compatible with our humanity. There it is. You know, it's part of what it means to be a human being. It's fulfilled in Christ because he is who he is. He can stand up, let his peace and stillness pass out into the universe that he has created, and it calms because he is the source of that stillness. Now, if we are going to unite ourselves to him, if we're going to pray to God the Father through his incarnate Son, you know, and avail ourselves of the fact that we share a common humanity with him, it wouldn't make much sense if we didn't have access to this peace and stillness by way of the fulfillment of our humanity. We have the potential to do this. That's what he's saying. We can calm the storm of the world around us. We don't have to be at the mercy of it. Learn to master time in this way, he says. And whatever the stress, the storm, the tragedy, or the confusion that you find yourself in, it is possible to be still and immobile in the present, face to face with God, the Lord Jesus Christ, in silence or doing whatever needs to be done or said. You can bring to God all that is around you, all the storm. All the storm. There's a link here to our understanding of the fact that we are all created with a priestly capacity as human beings to take the world around us and to bring it to God. You know, here's an example of where that is fulfilled for us as Christians in Christ. We should be able to do that. We should not have to be at the mercy of the chaos around us. We don't need to bring it into ourselves. If you are silent, you can rest in the eye of the cyclone or the hurricane, in the calm there, but leaving the storm around you to rage while you are where God is, at the only point of total stability. But this point of total stability is not a point where nothing happens. It is the point where all of the conflicting tensions meet and are counterbalanced by one another and are held in the powerful hand of God. We're talking about silence, entering into this silent, silent place. This is something that we need to be able to do, that we can practice and learn how to do we can learn how to do anything else. You know, it doesn't require divine revelation. We are human beings, and we can do this. It's a matter of doing it. He gives a practical an example that we can relate to easily in terms of bird watching. If you're going to watch birds, you know, you need to be ready to be alert, you know, fully awake, can't just, you know, doze off, completely alive, but quiet, silent, absolutely relaxed. If you're tensed up, you're going to get tired, you know, from sitting in one place. And if there are hunters, amongst us, you know that this is how you wait. You know, this is how you wait. You know? Otherwise, you won't see anything. You won't see any birds. You won't see any deer. You won't see anything. Rabbits are different. You can just kind of go charging out there and they'll piss off and blast them. So it's a little bit different with rabbits. Bird watching implies this stillness, this quiet, this repose, this ability to be relaxed and wait, and at the same time, an intense alertness, you know, alertness for what's going on. It's essential to be alert and alive at the same time, still and relaxed. This is contemplative preparation for contemplative silence. So you begin by quieting yourself down, and you're getting ready to be silent in a contemplative kind of way. Balance between the alertness that will allow you with a completely open mind to receive the impact of anything that comes your way. This is, there is so much in common here between this understanding and what you find in not just Zen Buddhism, but Taoism as well. You know, the understanding that it is possible for a human being to be silent in the present moment, and that in it, you find it in martial arts. You know, a master of Oriental martial arts, be completely relaxed and at the same time ready to respond to whatever, you know, happens. It is a human capacity, you know, that we can practice, and he is offering this as a way of preparing ourselves to pray. You know, imagine that. That's what we usually think of when we talk about prayer and preparing to pray.
Bob.
Yeah.
I have a question.
Okay. I'm almost finished. Go ahead, though.
I know, but I've been thinking.
Then I want to do something too.
Since you've been discussing this, which is what you're discussing now, is that we in our minds have stopped. Time goes on. Now that when time passes, we are then going into the future.
Well, future is coming.
That's right. Well, you're saying it's coming towards you, but as we can't stop time. But if we stop and just meditate, we're going into the future.
You can stop time because you are not identified with time. You yourself are not bound by time the way we think we are. We can stop rushing into the future, living in the future. The fact is, we can only live now. Right. That's the only reality we have.
We're living now, but time is still going. This is what I'm trying to get across.
But when the future comes, it's not the future, it's now.
The present.
It's not.
So it's a lie to say the present is the future becoming the past. The present is all you've got. Yesterday is wood, tomorrow is ashes. Only the present fire burns right now. People have heard that. Only in the present does the fire burn brightly. True.
True.
Tomorrow is wood and yesterday is ashes.
Yesterday is wood.
Yesterday
is wood. Why not cut the wood and stack it up? You stack it and you make it into a fire. You light the fire. It was wood to begin with. You know, now it's lit, now it's a fire, it's burning. In the future,
it's ashes.
Ashes. Not burning anymore. All we've got is the present. That's the reality. It is possible to live in the present, and time stops for us.
I don't like to think of it that way. If time stops,
it can be very useful.
If time stops, I'm already sitting on the lap of Jesus Christ. Okay?
Yeah. Okay.
This is the way I look at it. I don't want time to stop.
Okay. You don't. I mean, nobody's going to force you.
But I do meditate. Mm-hmm. But what I'm trying to say is, when I meditate, whether I'm really meditating psychologically or laziness, I'm sitting still. But when I sit still at 3:30 for a half hour, it's 4:00. That's the future.
Well, not until it's 4:00, it's not.
No, but when I say it's 30 minutes,
you know, and when it is 4:00, then it's not the future, it's 4:00. It's always the present.
Always the present.
It's always the present.
So what you're saying that if I sit down at 3:30 and I meditate and I get up at 4:00, I'm still the present.
That's right.
It's not the future.
You can only, no, how could it be the future?
Because time is gone.
Yeah, that's why it's not the future, because it's past.
So tomorrow will be the present.
Yes. Tomorrow, yes, it will be.
Tomorrow. Although it's the future.
Well,
now.
It's the future now.
But it won't be tomorrow.
Yeah, you don't know what's going to happen tomorrow.
I feel like there was a saying too. There's a saying that if you got one foot in the past, you know, regrets or worried about, you know, your past, or one foot in the future, worried about what you're going to do. There's only one thing you can do with today. Which is,
right? This is, you only can do that today.
Which is what?
Well,
no.
Pick up and crack them up.
Crack on today. If you live that way, you'll mess it up. You'll mess it up.
Yeah.
That sounds like a 60s thing.
You have to one foot in the past and one foot in the future, and try to live out of regret and,
right,
and anxiety will screw the day all up.
I think I read that in a Crumb comic about
that's
30 odd years
that's
ago.
That's where I get most of my stuff.
well,
aside from one thing, right?
Yeah.
It was a catch, a couple of things that you were saying.
Yeah.
There were spiritual exercises for stopping time. What were those things?
You're talking about being quiet.
Yeah, I got the book right here. You can read that over that.
Right.
Isn't it like stopping and then for the, like when
you'll be able to do it. Because there are things that are going on outside of you, and you don't let the chaos enter you. You know, and it actually makes you more efficient, you know, be able to.
In other words, you're not regretting the past
or
anticipating what you need to do next.
Right.
You know.
Pick something.
What you're saying is just thoughts, do what you're doing.
You can only do anything that can be done in the present anyway. So the present is really all you've got to deal with. Whether you're, you know.
I was thinking about that, the train ride that he was speaking of. The person always looking for that next stop.
Right.
Well, when you're looking for the next stop, does that mean you're missing the present conversation with the present moment?
Right. Yeah.
So while you may be looking for that 4 o'clock, you know, one street or you get your meditation, 4 o'clock, you miss the entire meditation, 30-minute meditation, because you're
if you're worried about
4 o'clock.
So if you just meditate, and when you're finished meditating, you look at 4 o'clock, it's still the present.
So you're not necessarily, like by stopping time, we're not necessarily stopping the clock.
No,
We're just realizing.
Clocks, what do they know about time? You know,
right.
Right.
We're realizing.
It's us.
Exactly. Clocks, all clocks do is measure time. I like clocks. Time fascinates me. I love watches. I love clocks. I have more watches than I need.
What he tells you to do in that meditation is he tells you to get a timer or something that will ring and let you know so that you can just stop thinking about the future. Just be in the present moment. And don't worry, you won't have to be watching your watch.
First of all, we'll start. We'll build up to that. You know, and thank you for the segue. I appreciate it very much. Sharon didn't know I was going to bring my timing devices here. This is a five minute timer. I wanted the longer than a 3 minute timer because I wanted to use it for the Jesus prayer. I wanted really longer than 5 minutes, but this is like I have a half an hour one. You know, Jimmy remembers it. That I used to try to shut myself up in half an hour, which doesn't work because it very quietly runs out and I very loudly just continue. But so this is a 5 minute one. So I'd like to practice silence.
Together?
Mm-hmm. Now.
That's not hard for me to do.
Good. Okay, so?
But I still worry about it.
So you can't drink your coffee? What are the ground rules of this silence? No coffee drink or nothing?
I think that would be better. I won't squeak the table. I first did this in a Zen class in college a long time ago. I learned a lot of things during that class.
Well.
Huh?
Not to think about
you can observe your thoughts and let them go by. That is the universal advice. They will come. Don't cling to them. Let them pass. So it's like passions. If you don't stop them, start to mess with them, pour gasoline on them, play with them, they will go by. You know, so it works for thoughts, it works for passions. Passions are thoughts anyhow, really. You know, they're a particular kind of thought. So yes, do that. You know, thoughts will come, let them pass by.
Have your eyes open or the
head closed? I'll let that up to you. It might be easier since there are a number of us to close our eyes. The ground rule is do not fall asleep. I won't close my eyes. I will watch I will contemplate the passage of time and the grains of sand as they pass by. And you may do that as well, you know, if you like. Or you close your eyes. And I'll let you know when the 5 minutes are over, so I'll be the buzzer. And Theodora, you know, we're expecting she can't be here tonight, so I'm recording this so she can do this along with us. Okay? Any more questions before we start? see. For some of you have to watch these, and that's troublesome.
That's so long, 3 minutes.
That was 5 minutes.
Oh, it was 5 minutes.
Yeah.
I was just going to say that was short.
Yeah, I thought it was short.
Yeah, it was short. It was 5 minutes. I thought it was 3 minutes.
And there's this, which I discovered recently. These are great. You know, 5, 15, 30, 60. And what you do is, I won't do it, I won't have you do another 5 minutes, but you turn it on, and then you pick one of these for the 5 minutes, and it just sits there. It doesn't make a sound, it doesn't do anything. And after 5 minutes, it's an alarm. It's great. It's great. Whichever one's on top. And when it beeps and goes off, then you just turn it back to the, put the zero on top, and it quits.
So you can put the kids in that?
They have a bigger one. You know, but you know, for 2 or 3 kids, it's very expensive.
For me, you need a gauge.
I'll let it sit over here while we're busy, and you can have a demonstration without the advantage of 5 minutes. But I wanted to have a chance to do that at some point, you know, here. Then of course he hasn't talked about the Jesus prayer earlier. He does. I mean, I guess he mentioned it somewhere around here. It doesn't bring it up. I don't think he even mentions it, the Jesus prayer in this chapter. But if once you have done this. And you can go to this silent place, and with practice, anyone can do this. He gives that example of that old woman who had been trying to do the Jesus prayers for years and years, never had such success, didn't feel as though she had learned anything about prayer, and he tells her, go into your room. I love this because, you know, I always feel much more calm when things are straightened up. You know, I can't... You should be able to meditate and pray in the midst of total chaos. But that's, you know, you accomplish that later on. First thing I have to do is get everything organized and orderly, you know, so it's settled down. I mean, as far as, you know, being upstairs, like in the office, it's really nice now. It hasn't been this orderly and organized in a very long time. You know, but at your icon corner, everything should be, you know, okay. You know, and you go into that place and you try to assume this silent place. We go into this silent place, and you know, I love the way he describes how you do this to prepare. You know, your silent prayer, and at some point there is a kind of a mental movement, and you know, oral prayer begins, and then there's a return to the silence. This kind of description you find in lots of spiritual. Guides, you know, spiritual advice, the passing in and out of spoken prayer, you know, and from us, yeah.
All right, well, I'm just going to.
Yeah.
If I'm going to, I thought maybe this is something that I'm trying to do with. I thought doing the Jesus prayer in the car quietly or even during this time is what, for lack of a better term, for me, creates a curtain in it. But as those thoughts come,
sure,
I say the Jesus prayer and remember why I'm there. And then at some point in time, I just feel like that creates that place.
Right.
Then it can be solid. And then as things, like you said, as things come in, say the Jesus prayer again.
Sure.
To keep that state.
There's a relationship between silence and the Jesus prayer, you know, which Father... No. The guy who wrote the book about AA.
Right.
No.
Father Mel.
Father Miletius Weber. He talks about, now I tried so hard to think of his name, I can't even remember why he's doing it. That's pretty terrible.
We're talking about creating a silent space.
So, he advised, he suggested And I mean, it's not like any one of these is an ironclad only way it can be done. I mean, nobody ever suggests that, you know. But he suggested, and it points out the relationship between the Jesus prayer and silence, to do it as he suggested, do it slowly. Lord Jesus Christ, Son of God, like that. And there's space between. That silence of the space between is part of the prayer. That's how it works. And then you just turn it up to the zero. That's what I should have had when I was trying to time myself. See, 30 minutes.
You need to have one.
I don't know. I got it from Amazon. It's only a few bucks. Huh?
Do you have to have a specific pace of your Jesus prayer? I find myself doing that.
I don't think so.
And taking that advice at times when I feel more the presence of God. You don't have the spacing exactly right.
No, you don't.
But then at other times, like, I...
And God is watching. He's got to watch. And a timer.
In my breathing.
Metronome.
Breathe in Jesus and blow out the sin.
Yeah, well, you know what Metropolitan Anthony says? Metropolitan Anthony says, now this was written a long time ago, and warnings against driving yourself buggy by abuse of the Jesus prayer was a lot more prominent in those days. You know, and lately, don't worry about it. It's not going to hurt you. They used to warn you about it, you know, more than they do now. You know, that the warnings have kind of become passé. You know, people don't warn anymore so much. But Metropolitan Empty said back in the day, do the Jesus prayer. There are lots of different ways to use it, lots of different ways to do it. Don't try to synchronize with your breath or your heartbeat.
What are already nutty?
There are new kinds of nutty.
I haven't experienced yet.
Is the point to have no specific reading?
I don't know.
So don't use my breathing?
I would say, if we were, okay, we're discussing, this is an, I'll treat this as an academic question. Okay. I'll treat this as an, it is a good question, I'll treat it as an academic question. Is there a point? The point is not an intellectual point. It has nothing to do with ideas or a way of applying the Jesus Prayer according to some formula. The relationship between the Jesus Prayer and cadence has got to do with the heartbeat and the rate of breathing and the synchronizing of the breathing, the heartbeat, and the prayer. So that's an academic answer, not a...
So don't do that?
Well, that's what Metropolitan Epstein said.
I think it happens automatically.
I don't know. Okay, there are a couple more things I want to say before, and then we want to talk more. We can talk more, but I will be done with the chapter. When he talks about this little old lady, and here going back to her room, straightening everything out, you know, and she was just being very pleased with her surroundings, very quiet. You know, beginning to, you know, to learn how to be silent. He says, knit in the presence of God. I don't know what I would do. I don't knit. You know, absolutely. Listen, that's absolutely true. It's true. I mean,
I would not do that.
Oh, I can't talk about this because it'd be 15 minutes. You know, but it's smoking a pipe is a truly contemplative experience. Loading the pipe, you cannot do it quickly. You can't, you know, it's just not, it has nothing to do with being done quickly. It needs to be done properly, and it takes time. You have got to slow down. It makes a space in time. It's got to be packed right, or it won't burn properly. It's a certain ritual aspect to it. And once it's finally lit properly, you know, then, you know, as well, to quote Johann Sebastian Bach, I smoke my pipe and say my prayers. You know, now the possible link that is there, waiting to be made, is the link between the aroma and incense. And so you are burning incense before God, smoking your pipe, you slow down. You know, if you're not going to do that, you shouldn't even light this pipe up because you will burn it too hot. burn your mouth and all of that. So, that, so yeah, there are definitely contemplative aspects, well, contemplative aspects to smoking a pipe, no question about it. And there's universal agreement on that among pipe smokers. Okay, so the little old lady, this is, she says, you know, and he wants to know after he talks to her sometime after she's tried this, you know, he says, what happened? And she begins to explain. She says she enjoyed the room. She began to knit, became more and more aware of the silence, and perceived that the silence was not simply an absence of noise, but had a substance. There is a presence of something. Now, what is that something? It is the silent presence of God Himself, you know, that you are able to experience. The silence around began to come and meet the silence in me. Beautiful. How similar, so similar to what he was talking about before with Jesus and the peace within him, you know, that he extends out into the world, you know. The saints can do that. In the presence of a saint, you calm down. You know, unless you take arms, you know, spiritually against, you know, him or her, but, you know, that silence is in them. All of a sudden, she says, I perceived that the silence was a presence. At the heart of the silence was him, capital H, who is all stillness, all peace, all poise. And during the rest of her life, she says she could always find the silence whenever she was quiet and silent herself, regardless of what's going on in the world. That's why we learn how to do this. And it can be learned, it can be practiced, and once we are able to find that place, then we begin to be prepared, you know, to experience the presence of God and pray in the way that we, you know, in a completely different kind of way, you know, because we're going beyond just the saying the recorded prayer, the written prayers, and all of that. Okay, she could sustain this contemplative silence for a while, and then her mind began to, you know, move, have a movement, and she turned to vocal prayer until the mind was still and settled again, and then dropped out of words into silence as before. And then one more thing at the last page, he quotes, and I first heard this from Father Tom Hopko, who was quoting maybe this book, maybe the biography, the life of the curé d'Ars, Jean Marie Vanet, you know, because I believe he, you know, he read that book. There is a story in that the life of the curé d'Ars, who was a Catholic priest, of an country priest, you know, of an old peasant who used to spend hours and hours sitting in the chapel, motionless, doing nothing. This intellect has nothing to do with this. Absolutely zip. The priest said to him, "What are you doing all these hours?" The old peasant said, "I look at him, and he looks at me, and we are happy." This can be reached only if we learn a certain amount of silence. Begin with the silence of the lips, silence of the emotions, the silence of the mind, move from one to the other, and the silence of the body. It would be a mistake to imagine that we can start at the highest end. What is the highest end? The silence of the heart and the mind. Now, you wouldn't want to stop your heart.
No.
That would be bad.
Very.
But this takes, this assumes that you've done your daily prayers and your, you know, no, I guess it doesn't assume.
No, it doesn't.
But also, you know, I find that.
If you want to enter more deeply into prayer.
Pray for my family and all that, I kind of get, you know.
Well, it's not either or.
But I'm just saying, yeah. I can be more quiet after, because it's not a promise.
Well, intercessory prayer. He talks other places in the book about virtually every other kind of prayer.
Right, yeah. I've been listening.
Okay. Yeah. So I'm done. And we're past time. And
Thank you. And when are we going to finish?
We're done.
Are you resting, God?
Well, I decided to not try to, you know, focus on that.
We start back in May.
The week after Bright Week.